Our ships are larger. We can crowd in 3 extra each. Their spotters ought to be able to lift off 2 each. Paul did the mental arithmetic, said, That's 3 short. Why don't they have 2 carry-alls to each crawler? Barked the Duke. You don't have enough extra equipment, Kine said. All the more reason we should protect what we have. Where could that carry-all go? Halleck asked. Could have been forced down somewhere out of sight, Kine said. The Duke grabbed the microphone, hesitated with thumb poised over its switch. How could they lose sight of a carry-all?
They keep their attention on the ground, looking for worm sign, Kine said.
The Duke thumbed the switch, spoke into the microphone. This is your Duke. We are coming down to take off Delta Ajax Niner's crew. All spotters are ordered to comply. Spotters will land on the east side. We will take the west. Over. He reached down, punched out his own command frequency, repeated the order for his own air cover, handed the microphone back to Kynes. Kynes returned to the working frequency, and a voice blasted from the speaker,
Almost a full load of spice! We have almost a full load! We can't leave that for a damned worm! Over!
Damn the spice! The Duke barked. He grabbed back the microphone, said, We can always get more spice. There are seats in our ships for all but 3 of you. Draw straws, or decide any way you like who's to go. But you're going, and that's an order. He slammed the microphone back into Kynes' hands, muttered, Sorry, as Kynes shook an injured finger.
How much time? Paul asked.
9 minutes, Kynes said.
The Duke said, This ship has more power than the others. If we took off under jet with 3/4 wings, we could crowd in an additional man.
That sand's soft, Kynes said.
With 4 extra men aboard on a jet takeoff, we could snap the wings, sire,
Halleck said.
Not on this ship, the Duke said.
He hauled back on the controls as the Thopter glided in beside the crawler. The wings tipped up, braked the Thopter to a skidding stop within 20 meters of the factory. The crawler was silent now, no sand spouting from its vents. Only a faint mechanical rumble issued from it, becoming more audible as the Duke opened the door. Immediately, their nostrils were assailed by the odor of cinnamon, heavy and pungent. With a loud flapping, the spotter aircraft glided down to the sand on the other side of the crawler. The Duke's own escort swooped in to land in line with him. Paul, looking out at the factory, saw how all the Thopters were dwarfed by it, gnats beside a warrior beetle.
Gurney, you and Paul toss out that rear seat, the Duke said.
He manually cranked the wings out to 3/4, set their angle, checked the jet pod controls.
Why the devil aren't they coming out of that machine?
They're hoping the carry-all will show up, Kynes said. They still have a few minutes.
He glanced off to the east. All turned to look the same direction, seeing no sign of the worm, but there was a heavy, charged feeling of anxiety in the air. The Duke took the microphone, punched for his command frequency, said,
Two of you toss out your shield generators. By the numbers. You can carry 1 more man that way. We're not leaving any men for that monster.
He keyed back to the working frequency, barked,
All right, you and Delta Ajax Niner, out! Now! This is a command from your Duke. On the double, or I'll cut that crawler apart with a laser gun.
A hatch snapped open near the front of the factory, another at the rear, another at the top. Men came tumbling out, sliding and scrambling down to the sand. A tall man in a patched working robe was the last to emerge. He jumped down to a track and then to the sand. The Duke hung the microphone on the panel, swung out onto the wing step, shouted,
2 men each into your spotters!
The man in the patched robe began tolling off pairs of his crew, pushing them toward the craft waiting on the other side.
4 over here, the Duke shouted. 4 into that ship back there!
He jabbed a finger at an escort thopter directly behind him. The guards were just wrestling the shield generator out of it.
And 4 into that ship over there!
He pointed to the other escort that had shed its shield generator.
3 each into the others! Run, you sand dogs!
The tall man finished counting off his crew, came slogging across the sand, followed by 3 of his companions.
I hear the worm, but I can't see it, Kynes said.
The others heard it then, and a brace of slithering, distant and growing louder.
Damn sloppy way to operate, the Duke muttered.
Aircraft began flapping off the sand around them. It reminded the Duke of a time in his home planet's jungles, a sudden emergence into a clearing, and carrion birds lifting away from the carcass of a wild ox. The spice workers slogged up to the side of the Thopter, started climbing in behind the Duke. Halleck helped, dragging them into the rear.
In you go, boys, he snapped. On the double!
Paul, crowded into a corner by sweating men, smelled the perspiration of fear, saw that 2 of the men had poor neck adjustments on their stillsuits. He filed the information in his memory for future action. His father would have to order tighter stillsuit discipline. Men tended to become sloppy if you didn't watch such things. The last man came gasping into the rear, said, "The worm! It's almost on us! Blast off!" The Duke slid into a seat, frowning, said, "We still have almost 3 minutes on the original contact estimate. Is that right, Kynes?" He shut his door, checked it.
"Almost exactly, my lord," Kynes said, and he thought, "A cool one, this Duke."
"All secured here, sire," Halleck said.
The Duke nodded, watched the last of his escort take off. He adjusted the igniter, glanced once more at wings and instruments, punched the jet sequence. The takeoff pressed the Duke and Kynes deep into their seats, compressed the people in the rear. Kynes watched the way the Duke handled the controls, gently, surely. The Thopter was fully airborne now, and the Duke studied his instruments, glanced left and right at his wings.
"She's very heavy, sire," Halleck said.
"Well within the tolerances of this ship," the Duke said. "You didn't really think I'd risk this cargo, did you, Gurney?"
Halleck grinned, said,
"Not a bit of it, sire."
The Duke banked his craft in a long, easy curve, climbing over the crawler. Paul, crushed into a corner beside a window, stared down at the silent machine on the sand. The worm sign had broken off about 400 meters from the crawler, and now there appeared to be turbulence in the sand around the factory.
"The worm is now beneath the crawler," Kynes said. "You are about to witness a thing few have seen."
Flecks of dust shadowed the sand around the crawler now. The big machine began to tip down to the right. A gigantic sand whirlpool began forming there to the right of the crawler. It moved faster and faster. Sand and dust filled the air now for hundreds of meters around. Then they saw it. A wide hole emerged from the sand. Sunlight flashed from glistening white spokes within it. The hole's diameter was at least twice the length of the crawler, Paul estimated. He watched as the machine slid into that opening in a billow of dust and sand. The hole pulled back.
"Gods, what a monster!" muttered a man beside Paul. "Got all our flog and spice," growled another.
"Someone is going to pay for this," the Duke said. "I promise you that."
By the very flatness of his father's voice, Paul sensed the deep anger. He found that he shared it. This was criminal waste. In the silence that followed, they heard Kynes.
"Bless the Maker and his water," Kynes murmured. "Bless the coming and going of him. May his passage cleanse the world. May he keep the world for his people."
"What's that you're saying?" the Duke asked.
But Kynes remained silent. Paul glanced at the men crowded around him. They were staring fearfully at the back of Kynes' head. One of them whispered,
"Liet!"
Kynes turned, scowling. The man sank back, abashed. Another of the rescued men began coughing, dry and rasping. Presently he gasped,
"Curse this hell hole!"
The tall dune man who had come last out of the crawler said,
"Be you still, Koss. You but worsen your cough."
He stirred among the men until he could look through them at the back of the Duke's head.
"You'd be the Duke Leto, I warrant," he said. "It's to you we give thanks for our lives. We were ready to end it there until you came along."
"Quiet, man, and let the Duke fly his ship," Halleck muttered.
Paul glanced at Halleck. He, too, had seen the tension wrinkles at the corner of his father's jaw. One walked softly when the Duke was in a rage. Leto began easing his thopter out of its great banking circle, stopped at a new sign of movement on the sand. The worm had withdrawn into the depths, and now, near where the crawler had been, two figures could be seen moving north, away from the sand depression. They appeared to glide over the surface with hardly a lifting of dust to mark their passage.
"Who's that down there?" the Duke barked.
"Two Johnnies who came along for the ride, sor," said the tall dune man. "Why wasn't something said about them?"
"It was the chance they took, sor," the dune man said.
"My lord," said Kynes, "these men know it's of little use to do anything about men trapped on the desert in worm country."
"We'll send a ship from base for them," the Duke snapped.
"As you wish, my lord," Kynes said. "But likely when the ship gets here, there'll be no one to rescue."
"We'll send a ship anyway," the Duke said.
"They were right beside where the worm came up," Paul said. "How'd they escape?"
"The sides of the hole cave in and make the distances deceptive," Kynes said.
"You waste fuel here, sire," Halleck ventured.
"Aye, Gurney."
The Duke brought his craft around toward the shield wall. His escort came down from circling stations, took up positions above and on both sides. Paul thought about what the dune man and Kynes had said. He sensed half-truths, outright lies. The men on the sand had glided across the surface so surely, moving in a way obviously calculated to keep from luring the worm back out of its depths. Fremen, Paul thought. Who else would be so sure on the sand? Who else might be left out of your worries as a matter of course? Because they are in no danger? They know how to live here.
They know how to outwit the worm.
What were Fremen doing on that crawler? Paul asked.
Kynes whirled.
The tall dune man turned wide eyes on Paul, blue within blue within blue.
Who be this lad? He asked.
Halleck moved to place himself between the man and Paul, said,
This is Paul Atreides, the ducal heir.
Why says he there were Fremen on our rumbler? The man asked.
They fit the description, Paul said.
Kynes snorted.
You can't tell Fremen just by looking at them.
He looked at the dune man.
You, who were those men?
Friends of one of the others, the dune man said. Just friends from a village who wanted to see the spice sands.
Kynes turned away.
Fremen!
But he was remembering the words of the legend. The Lizan al-Ghaib shall see through all subterfuge.
They be dead now, most likely, young sor, the dune man said. We should not speak unkindly on them.
But Paul heard the falsehood in their voices, felt the menace that had brought Halleck instinctively into guarding position. Paul spoke dryly.
A terrible place for them to die.
Without turning, Kynes said,
When God hath ordained a creature to die in a particular place, he causeth that creature's wants to direct him to that place.
Leto turned a hard stare at Kynes, and Kynes, returning the stare, found himself troubled by a fact he had observed here. This duke was concerned more over the men than he was over the spice. He risked his own life and that of his son to save the men. He passed off the loss of a spice crawler with a gesture. The threat to men's lives had him in a rage. A leader such as that would command fanatic loyalty. He would be difficult to defeat.
Against his own will and all previous judgments, Kynes admitted to himself,
I like this, Duke.
Greatness is a transitory experience. It is never consistent. It depends in part upon the myth-making imagination of humankind. The person who experiences greatness must have a feeling for the myth he is in. He must reflect what is projected upon him, and he must have a strong sense of the sardonic. This is what uncouples him from belief in his own pretensions. The sardonic is all that permits him to move within himself. Without this quality, even occasional greatness will destroy a man.
From Collected Sayings of Muad'Dib by the Princess Irulan.
In the dining hall of the Arakeen Great House, suspensor lamps had been lighted against the early dark. They cast their yellow glows upward onto the black bull's head with its bloody horns, and onto the darkly glistening oil painting of the old duke. Beneath these talismans, white linen shone around the burnished reflections of the Atreides silver, which had been placed in precise arrangements along the great table, little archipelagos of service waiting beside crystal glasses, each setting squared off before a heavy wooden chair. The classic central chandelier remained unlighted, and its chain twisted upward into shadows where the mechanism of the poison snooper had been concealed. Pausing in the doorway to inspect the arrangements, the Duke thought about the poison snooper and what it signified in his society.
All of a pattern, he thought. You can plumb us by our language. The precise and delicate delineations for ways to administer treacherous death. Will someone try chalmerky tonight? Poison in the drink? Or will it be chalmus, poison in the food?
He shook his head. Beside each plate on the long table stood a flagon of water. There was enough water along the table, the Duke estimated, to keep a poor Arakeen family for more than a year. Flanking the doorway in which he stood were broad laving basins of ornate yellow and green tile. Each basin had its rack of towels. It was the custom, the housekeeper had explained, for guests, as they entered, to dip their hands ceremoniously into a basin, slop several cups of water onto the floor, dry their hands on a towel, and fling the towel into the growing puddle at the door. After the dinner, beggars gathered outside to get the water squeezings from the towels.
How typical of a Harkonnen fief, the Duke thought. Every degradation of the spirit that can be conceived.
He took a deep breath, feeling rage tighten his stomach.
The custom stops here, he muttered.
He saw a serving woman, one of the old and gnarled ones the housekeeper had recommended, hovering at the doorway from the kitchen across from him. The Duke signaled with upraised hand. She moved out of the shadows, scurried around the table toward him, and he noted the leathery face, the blue within blue eyes.
My lord wishes.
She kept her head bowed, eyes shielded. He gestured.
Have these basins and towels removed.
But, noble born.
She looked up, mouth gaping.
I know the custom, he barked. Take these basins to the front door. While we're eating, and until we've finished, each beggar who calls may have a full cup of water. Understood?
Her leathery face displayed a twisting of emotions. Dismay. Anger. With sudden insight, Leto realized that she must have planned to sell the water squeezings from the foot-trampled towels, wringing a few coppers from the wretches who came to the door. Perhaps that also was a custom. His face clouded, and he growled,
I'm posting a guard to see that my orders are carried out to the letter.
He whirled, strode back down the passage to the great hall.